Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. Got some great stuff we're going to talk about. I know everybody is sitting at home watching the LinkedIn Lives that we're doing and our podcast because of the deep freeze around most of the country. So thanks for spending your time instead of watching Netflix, YouTube, Amazon Prime, Hulu, or any of the other million services out there. And you probably are done watching whatever you've been watched, binge watched over the past couple of weeks. And so now you have time to listen to the OIG Roundtable. So we appreciate having you. And as always, I've got the team here. Matt Kachansky, retired special agent in charge from the OIG, retired then from the Northeast UPIC and is now the senior director of our payment integrity team. And Wade McFall, assistant special agent in charge, parentheses, retired from the OIG's LA office and a director on our investigative team now. And so we want to talk today about this premise of measurement of success and how those measurements of success capitalize a plan for ROI, and how do you capitalize on your successes to increase ROI. But it's really about measurement of success. And Wade, you know, we talk about this a lot because as someone who was an assistant special agent in charge, you managed a team of agents when you were doing control tactics and firearms. You're managing the range. And even now, you know, your people are looking to you for answers as one of our directors. And so there's always a disconnect between an individual person's definition of success and an individual person's perception of that success versus the organization. So let's talk a little bit about at the individual level, where should people, like, where do you recalibrate when you're coming into an organization new, when you're on, you know, for our friends who are retiring from their careers in OIG or law enforcement or whatever, and they're looking into their second career, there's got to be, you know, I'll call it, what are the hints, tips, and tricks that you'll give that, you know, people should be thinking about relative to individual level setting of success? And how do you individually benchmark your personal success for an organization?
Right. Well, I think the first kind of the first tip, I guess, is to come in. You know, we all have years of experience, so we know how to do investigations and that type of thing. But you should come in having no expectation or and at least an open mind to the expectations of what the SIU might be requiring from you. And that's something that is up to the SIU management to make sure that those goals are clear. So, you know, we have expectations from our previous work in the healthcare fraud arena, but it's very different from SIU work, you know, private pay, MCOs, whatever it may be, it's different unless you came from that. And even then it's going to be different because even within Advise, our different clients, SIU clients probably have different like end goals and you know there's different ways to measure ROI. You know, you look at referrals, you look at you know like recoveries, you look at lots of different, you know, different ways to look at it. So even within our clients there's going to be different end goals that have to be, and again, it's up to the SIU management to make those goals and processes clear to the investigators, knowing that the investigators come from all different walks of life and they're a lot of times in their previous career. Not everybody is a retired, you know, agent, but a lot of people are, or they came from the Mufuku or they came from somewhere else. So it's important to not have a mindset of, oh, I know that when I go, because I had this issue early on, that I was of the mindset that like the main thing that we're trying to do here is referrals to law enforcement. That's not the SIU's goal. So you have to make sure you know what that goal is, you know, and it has to be a balance of the quality of the cases in conjunction with the speed of the cases and the financial impact of the cases. All that stuff has to be clearly, you know, delineated by the management. Because there's a number of different ways that, you know, the SIU is going to be critiqued or, you know, different ways they're looking at the end results. But it, again, it goes between case volumes and case cases resolved as opposed to cases that are closed with no result. So there's a lot of different metrics involved, but the key is to not come in with your own mindset of, this is going to be all about referrals, or it's only about, you know, savings as opposed to recoveries. So if you come in with an open mind, it's really the responsibility of the SIU management to say, okay, this, you may have come from different places. This is our goal. This is our end game. Whether in most cases, it's probably going to be ROI, but to make that clear to the investigator, it's like, I don't care what you used to do, wherever you came from, you're here now. And these are our priorities. Number one being whatever ROI, and maybe referrals to law enforcement is way down the list of numbers 8 or 9 or 10. But as long as those are portrayed to the investigator, and the investigator knows what's expected of them, what they're going to be critiqued on at the end of the year, that's the main thing. So don't come in with a preconceived notion on you. If you're new to the SIU world, you maybe don't really realize the end goal is different from law enforcement agencies. So that's
right.
The key, I think, is to come in with an open mind and let them tell you what is expected of you.
And I'll tell you, Wade, and you and I both experienced this to some extent, and you certainly had on some of the prior work, but that's hard. It's really a challenge because you're coming with 20, 30 years of experience where, you know, I hesitate to use it in air quotes, but I'll use it in air quotes. You know, the right and proper way to get things done, because it led you to being successful as an OIG agent for, you know, your 25 years being there. And sometimes it is very hard. It's not that you're letting go of good habits or bad habits, but it's sometimes very hard to let go of the things that you measured yourself as being some of the metrics for personal success, and how those metrics either do or don't fit in to what the corporate goals are. Because at the end of the day, the payers are a corporation, and it's, you know, whether or not the SIU is considered an afterthought or not, right? In a lot of instances, I think SIUs are sometimes treated as the redheaded stepchild of the organization, because when you're a for-profit organization, it's the money is paid, and the theory is that, well, this money is out the door. And it's not like it's not like the SIU is going to get back $30 billion when we're a $30 billion company. So sometimes the discrepancy becomes the challenge. And so, Matt, it really then comes down to this whole argument in measuring success. And part of that success measurement, there's a couple of things. And we talk a lot about these in our podcast. We talk a lot about ROI, but we talk about things in tangible terms. But there's also intangible things that create success. Now, part of the problem is that a lot of those intangibles have a cost associated with them. For example, a data analytic tool or a case management tool are going to be things that cost money. They may not result in necessarily a direct ROI, but they're going to result in an intangible ROI for things like operational efficiencies and things of that sort. And so it almost comes down to, how does the plan measure success for the SIU?
Yeah, and that's where it can get very complex. You were right on it when you were talking about sometimes the SIU is the redheaded stepchild. Sometimes the goals of the SIU are in direct contradiction to the goals for the plan. You know, so the SIU, tip of the spear, program integrity, payment integrity, SIU. SIU goals, you know, get money back, stop the providers from doing bad things. We've had instances where, yeah, that's all great, but when you peel it back, that provider is a revenue generator for the plan. They don't want to abrade that provider. They don't want to kick that provider out. They might want to make that provider a larger part of the plan because of the numbers of patients they're bringing in. So the loss at the end is not ROI to them, it's injuring their relationship with a provider that's a revenue generator that's bringing ROI to them, to the plan itself. So it's very difficult. You have to work delicately across the sphere of program integrity to make sure that you're not only identifying the outliers and all that, but you're identifying the outliers that everybody wants to take action against. So that's a difficult thing there. The other is, and you're right, there's ROI and things like that, but there's also part of an SIU's job should be to be a consultant to the plan. In working these cases, we see these vulnerabilities. We see these issues that come up that allow these things to happen. And then you work with them to change the construct of the plan to make sure those don't happen again. That's a difficult thing. It's immeasurable, but it's probably a more important aspect of the job.
So that's a great point that you make. You know, like for us, I will give you this credit.
I'm going to write the date down.
So, you know, the thing that's interesting is Advise as an organization, we're a consulting and advisory firm. And while we operate SIUs for a large number of plans around the country in the small, medium, and large space, right? At the end of the day, what I think is a differentiator is that we aren't just there moving the cases from one side to the other. We're trying to find these opportunities where the plan is getting, we'll call it a value add. They're getting our expertise. Our investigators have an immense amount of experience in all aspects, law enforcement, federal, state, local, healthcare centric, by the way. We're not just bringing in like a retired homicide detective. And it's not to say that that isn't going to be a good person, but we're bringing very subject matter expertise, whether it be our auditors, our investigators, our nurse auditors, our project managers, our data analytics people. And so we inherently have a mindset, and what we train our staff to do is have that mindset also for consulting and advisory. I think where you're bringing up a great point is that even if you are an employee of a payer and in the SIU, you still should be finding opportunities where you're consulting, where you're finding these things. And I know, you know, Wade, to go back to you, I'll put on the OIG hat. We would do the management implication reports, the fraud alerts, all of that stuff. It's essentially the same thing. You're finding a program vulnerability or identifying that. That is a way of measuring success, right? As an SIU investigator, it shouldn't be any different. And I know we talked a lot about whether or not in our government days, anybody cared about our management implication reports, our fraud alerts, or any of that. But at the end of the day, putting together these kinds of things on the payer side certainly have a benefit, right? Because at the very minimum, you're at least highlighting something that the plan is going to look at, right? So there is, and that's an that's not a tangible. It's an intangible that can become a tangible as you're going through this.
Yeah, and I agree that like in the management implication reports, it's the people that are in the weeds, the agents that are out on the street doing the cases, they're the ones that are going to see these issues that should be brought up. Same with an SIU, the investigator is going to see this. The ASAC or the SAC or the deputy inspector general, whoever, they're not going to see these kinds of things. And just like the SIU manager or the SIU director, they're not going to see these issues that could have like an overall change on the way things are run, basically, or systematic changes that are not going to be seen by the upper management, or that has to come from the people out on the street doing the investigations, or the people behind the computer screen doing the investigations.
Right. And those are, and at the end of the day, and Matt, I'll go to you for the final piece of it, is there become things that you want to create for operational efficiency purposes. For example, we're now in the process of creating a more efficient way for doing our statistical sample reviews, right? We identified that there was an area that we needed to improve upon in the way that we were doing it to cut time down. The way that we were getting the records together, the way we were doing our back end process was slow. We identified a way to cut that time down substantially. Now, what does that do, right? So Matt, something like that has it, it's intangible at the moment, but it creates tangibility later on. And I think it's difficult to ascribe, is it 3-1, 4-1, 5-1 on your ROI? But there's certainly operational efficiencies work towards the tangible ROI. Not having to, for example, if you have a case manager, right, going right into the case manager. If you have a data analytic tool, going into that data analytic tool. If you've got a streamlined process for identifying whatever it is that you're doing, operational efficiencies become tangible ROI.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at your example, you look at a case management system where things are automated, the searches are automated, you put in an NPI and it's connected and you get background information on the provider that generates into the case management tool. You don't have to do that research individually to pull those things up. All those things save time. Time for an investigator means they can do more cases. They can get through cases quicker. So over time, there are tangible results, more recoveries, more cases resolved because they've become more efficient in the process itself. The same is true for what, you know, a consulting firm can do for a plan. I'll give you an example of, we're looking at some things involving the prepay process, where, you know, we're working with a client where their process is not quite lined up. So they're getting a lot of issues with timely payments of claims, and they're paying interest and penalties on it. So we're trying to find a way to streamline that process, automate it a lot more. And then so the paperwork flows and they can, you know, get the medical records, do the reviews, prepay, and get the resolution of that claim done timely, so they don't have to pay those things anymore.
Right. That's a great example, right? An intangible efficiency creates a tangible result.
Yep.
And it's the thing I think that becomes the challenge. We get asked this pretty frequently, is how do we measure ROI when we buy a data analytics tool? How do we measure ROI when we buy a case manager? And I think that often it just becomes a challenge. You know what the cost is, the operating cost for it, and that comes off of your budget. But I think it's very difficult to ascribe a tangible ROI, particularly when we know that there are some data analytics tools out there that are so cumbersome to use. We know of at least a couple that are being used on some of our clients where the learning curve is pretty high and they're not as user friendly. So to go back to Wade and I on a contract that we were on years ago, HCD, human centered design, or UX, the user experience, isn't all that great. Right. When we look for those that know RAT stats, you know this. RAT stats is the most unattractive. I mean, they say that the girls and boys get prettier at closing time. If RAT stats was a girl or a boy, I don't know if it would get any prettier at closing time, no matter how many tequila shots I did. RAT stats is just it's just not an attractive tool, but it's not a difficult, cumbersome tool to use. And I think that's, you know, you have to kind of figure out where you're getting your best benefit from a time perspective. If an investigator is spending a fair amount of time clicking and moving and tracking and doing all these things, to just be able to get to a screen where they have to input one thing, the opportunity cost is immense and your ROI is immediately reduced. So you've got a tool that you've invested a lot of money in, and it may get you at the end the results that you need, but it's how do you get there, right? Is, you know, the maze. If the quickest direction is straight, but your tool is making you take a lot of turns, it's going to create a lot of frustration. And I know, Wade, you've experienced this on a few of the tools where at some point you just kind of throw your hands up and say, I'm going to do something else for now and I'll start over tomorrow because I've gone down this rabbit hole and I still didn't get where I needed to go. And then, you know, you've lost an hour of hunting and pecking for something, which creates inherent frustrations, inherent reduction of time, effort, and ability to be productive. So, you know, that becomes a challenge. And that becomes the thing that reduces ROI and then reduces the value of where everybody is at the time, right? So I'll give you the very last word before we close it down. Not all tools are created equal.
Right. Is that last word to me or Matt?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Yeah,
so, exactly. Well, and the some of the tools that you're talking about too, I mean, eventually they become efficient, but it may take somebody, you know, weeks or months of spinning their wheels to get to the point where they where they know, you know, the shortcuts basically to make it more of a straight line as opposed to a lot of lefts and rights. So, you know, in the long run, they work pretty well, but, you know, it's not like all of our investigators are here for a 10-year stint. You know, some of them come for a year or two, and it may take them 6 months or maybe even a year to get proficient in these, and then they end up going somewhere else, or they leave for whatever reason. So that that learning curve just is so inefficient that it really is a ROI killer, that it takes somebody months to be efficient using the tool. Whereas if you get another tool, again, we've talked about this, that maybe has fewer bells and whistles that you don't need anyways, fewer steps to get from, you know, A to Z, that the efficiency there goes up tremendously as opposed to spinning the wheels.
It's a great point. And I know that one of the things that we hear, the data analytics tool that we have here in-house has no bells and whistles. It's information, it's dashboards, it's what people need. And that's, I think, one of the biggest things that we hear from a lot of our SIU clients that we're doing augmented for and some staffing related work for, is we hear that, is that finally a tool that requires me to click once on what I need and I get it. There aren't 50 different things we have to do. And you're right. If you've got somebody where it takes them months to become proficient in the tool, by the time they become proficient in the tool, they've already started to look for a new job because they've just gotten frustrated with it or what have you. It is. So there is something to be said, and this is probably a topic for another day, but there is something to be said about, have you bogged down your team with so many tools that their frustration level has caused them to quietly quit? That's a new phrase that's out there, the quiet quit, right? Or that you've made the process so cumbersome and the learning curve so hard that people never get to the next step because they're spending so much time trying to figure out the tool and where to click. So I think it's definitely another topic that, you know, we should be having, but, you know, it's good insight. And I think at the end of the day, ROI killers, and does the plan think about the SIU to the level that you think about the SIU? I think that's what it comes down to, is the SIU as important to the plan as it is to you. So we'll keep these conversations going, of course. Always good to see you guys. Okay. Stay warm. Wade, I'm hearing there's a warm spell coming through Minnesota and Wisconsin. It's going to be 25 degrees. You might be out in your, as they say in the old school days, your shirt sleeves.
Yep. Be double digits as opposed to these single digits we've had for four weeks. Oh, yes.
Balmy. It's balmy. Yeah. For those in South Florida, stay away from the falling iguanas. They'll get you. The other day on the news, I saw the thing had to have been 2 feet or 2.5 feet long, and it had to be 5 or 6 pounds. Imagine getting hit with one of those things as it's falling out of a tree. It's gonna do some damage. So stay away from the trees in South Florida. Yeah.
All right, gents. Stay away.
The what?
Have the iguanas stay away from the trees.
That's a true story. Yeah, it's a true story. So. All right, guys, always good to see you. And as always, thanks to everybody who has joined us for our weekly podcast and our LinkedIn Lives. We appreciate you as always. Go to the website, sign up for the newsletter, check us out on LinkedIn. We've got a job posting. We're looking for some auditors. If you are an auditor and you have prior experience doing audits, and or if you've ever worked as an auditor, CPC, CPMA auditor we're talking about, with an SIU or payment integrity adjacent, reach out to us. We want to know. You can get us on LinkedIn. You can send us emails off of the website, info@advisehealth.com, and LinkedIn. We have a current job posting on LinkedIn and Indeed. So find us, talk to us. We're looking to find the best of the best in the space for auditors and investigators. So keep in touch with us. And until next time, we'll see you everybody on the next OIG Roundtable. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.